And in studio with us now is Frank Moe. And as I mentioned, Frank and his wife Sherry live here in Cook County. Frank is a former state representative from the Bemidji area and is going to be taking this Thursday, not Wednesday. I said March 1st, Wednesday. That's not correct. Thursday. You're going to be starting on a rather unusual dog sled trip.
Yeah, we'll be leaving Harbor Park at about 12:30 on Thursday.
But not going north.
No, we're going south.
Not something that mushers generally do.
Yeah, how about all this snow? I mean, I was prepared to run on pavement and gravel, you know, if necessary, all the way to St. Paul, and we got snow coming in day after day.
That's the first, and there's a lot I want to ask you about with this particular event, but the one thing that several people have asked me is...
am I crazy?
No, well, I had that answer. I knew that answer. Are you running on wheels? I mean, are you running like an ATV, as I know mushers kind of do when they're training dogs, or are you going on a sled? And how will you do that?
No, we'll be taking a sled the whole way. Odin Jorgensen is going to lead me out of town, probably on a snowmobile to get out of town until we get to the snowmobile trail, and then we'll get up to the North Shore Corridor Trail and head to Finland, where we're going to meet another team, actually, from Wintergreen, from the Shirkies. Dave and Amy Freeman are going to there's an event also in Ely, and they'll be leaving there, and we'll be rendezvousing in Finland, where they'll be passing off a bunch of petitions that they have collected in Ely and Isabella. Meet me in Finland, where we'll merge all of our petitions and continue on down to St. Paul.
Now, that's one thing to say if you're driving a car. You simply go down 61, catch 35, right. and make a left. I am assuming it's a little different on a dog sled.
Well, you know, if you look at the snowmobile maps online or you get one, there's snowmobile trails all the way virtually to St. Paul. And so we'll be primarily on the snowmobile trails. We'll leave Finland, go just outside of Two Harbors, and we'll drop down into Duluth. Actually, there's a snowmobile trail that goes all the way to Lester Park, where we're going to have a rally in Duluth on Sunday, March 4th at 3:00. And so we'll have a rally there. A bunch of people are going to come out, a lot of people from Fond du Lac and the Duluth area, and turn around and then continue on down the trail. We'll stay at the Munger Inn that night. Will Munger Jr., you know, whose dad the Munger Trail is named after for all his conservation work. We'll have a event there in the morning on Monday, March 5th, and head off down the trail, the Munger Trail, and kind of parallel 61. And there's some options there. So if that trail is pretty rough, you know, we can hit some snowmobile trails closer to St. Croix Valley.
Oh, I see. Sure.
And then there's a corridor that goes all the way from north of Stillwater right to about a mile from the Capitol. It's called the Gateway Trail.
I've ridden my bike on it many times.
Right.
I had the worst rollerblade accident in the history of man on that trail. Well, probably not the worst, but
explains a lot.
It was bad. It does. It does. It was bad. It was the second and last time I ever had him on.
But have you ever tried rollerblading with your dogs, having them pull you? That's a trick.
No, that didn't
work very well for me.
No.
This, regardless of the weather, we're prepared to go. Okay. And we've got some expedition runner plastic that that Paul Shirky from Ely has given us that we've attached to the sled. And if it's gravel and pavement, you know, we'll be prepared to do that. And we've also got a lot of dog booties for the dogs. And our friend and veterinarian Jerry Vanek is going to be traveling along with the trip, shadowing it. So if there's any dog issues at all, he can take care of the dogs on the way.
Now, I know that the petitions, the whole trip, the rally down at the Capitol is to address the issue. I'm not too sure I want to use the word protest issue, but address the issue of sulfide mining. What gave you the idea to do this, to bring petitions in a dog sled?
Well, two things. One, it's, you know, the mushing racing season's virtually over, and so... The Ely waiters.
And you got to find a way to.
I know, I could stay on the dogs for another 8 days here. But if you ask, a polling that's been done about sulfide mining in Minnesota, the vast majority of Minnesotans just don't know a lot about it. But when you educate them about it, you talk about the history of sulfide mining pollution everywhere that these mines have been done anywhere in the world. It's an environmental catastrophe. There's no exceptions to this. And so when you explain it to them and who these companies are and what their track record is, most Minnesotans that get that information say, well, why would we do this?
Uh-huh.
Why would we dump a whole bunch of sulfuric acid in Lake Superior and the Boundary Waters, polluting it forever, killing the fish in order to have some jobs and some money for some multinational corporations for 20 years? It just doesn't make any sense.
Now, normally when people talk about mining in northern Minnesota, people automatically assume the Range. We're not talking about the Range. We're talking about an area called, if I'm not mistaken, the Duluth Complex.
Right. Well,
where these companies, and there's quite a few of them, as I understand it, are very interested in mining for not ore, but things like nickel and copper and other what they term precious metals.
Right. Well, the mining technology has evolved where they can make mines profitable by extracting smaller and smaller amounts of metal and minerals from the rock. And the proposed mines are, in fact, west and south of Duluth, all the way up through the what you call the Duluth Complex and into the Range. These just micro amounts of minerals and metal is what they're planning to pull out of this rock. I mean, so maybe 1% of the rock mass will actually be kept, and the rest will be left in tailings piles and pools. So, waste will be huge.
Yeah, I read that waste is 99%, and that out of a ton of rock that they mine, there might be 12 to 15 pounds of metal that come out of there. But what is the process? Apparently, when they do this, it pulls off the sulfur dioxide is what gets dumped.
Yeah,
isn't that correct?
It's sulfuric acid.
Or sulfuric acid.
Battery acid. And it doesn't create the sulfuric acid initially when they do the mining. What they do is they pulverize this rock, and so they expose the tailings from the mine to water and air, and the rock is also has a high concentration of sulfur. And when you expose that sulfur to air and water, it creates sulfuric acid.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the problem. They claim to have the latest, greatest mining technology, as they've claimed every time that they've done this, and that they can try to encapsulate that waste. But without exception, what ends up happening ultimately, I mean, we're talking about trying to maintain this stuff into perpetuity, which mm-hmm. is forever. Eventually, it does get exposed to water and air and create sulfuric acid.
Is there, and I know you mentioned that wherever they've done it, it's been polluting. It has resulted in pollution. As you said, in fact, is several years ago, I believe I've got it right here, the reclamation manager for the Minnesota DNR said that the bad pollution was happening under old technology, and the technology has advanced quite a bit. Are there mines using the current technology and still polluting?
No, they want us to be the guinea pig.
Oh, right.
they think, well, we'll try to hoodwink these Minnesotans into going along with this idea. It's like the pay no attention to the man behind the curtain thing. Their track record is 100%, and somehow we're supposed to believe that now they've got new technology. I mean, there's test wells test borings that have been drilled up there now near Ely, which are leaking sulfuric acid now. I mean, the other team, Dave and Amy Freeman, is going to sample one of those and bring that sample.
And who
forward.
Did those test holes? The mining companies?
Mining companies, yeah.
Well, apparently they're hoodwinking more than. By the way, I want to remind our listeners we're visiting with Frank Moe. Frank, a local.
It's a technical term, hoodwinking.
One of those musher terms. Means left, I think. Anyway, Frank is going to be this Thursday. He's going to be setting out from Harbor Park at around noon and heading down toward the state capitol with stops in between. But over the past 6 years. I know that in 2006, the IRRRB gave a $1.25 million loan to one of these companies to do exploration or, you know. And back in, I can't remember, I think 2010, one of the companies, Duluth Metals, was the governor at that time, Tim Pawlenty, named the day for them in August of 2010. Right. It's Duluth Metals Day in Minnesota. Obviously, they must have pretty good PR departments.
Yeah, well, they've got pretty good PR departments, and they've got endless money. Polymet is a Canadian subsidiary of another larger company, and you've talked about this on the program here, Glencore. Glencore is a multinational holding company. With the merger that they just did, it's the largest multinational holding company in the world. And so in assets of hundreds of billions of dollars, I mean, this is chump change to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're to borrow a phrase from Rick Perry, they're vultures. You know, they hover around the globe and they look for opportunities to try to create mines where they can make money, and they seem to be focusing a lot of attention right now on Minnesota. But we're not the only place that they're looking to exploit.
Well, and as I understand, one of the reasons is because the area that we're talking about, including the Duluth complex, is one of the largest reservoirs. And I don't know if that's the right word, but reserves of these precious metals, what they term precious metals, nickel and copper, and I can't remember the other one. I wrote it. Oh, here, platinum group metals. Anywhere, not just in the United States, but in the world.
Well, that's an unconfirmed estimate coming only from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not going to deny that there those metals and minerals exist in that rock. Obviously, you know, they're not the only ones interested. I mean, Antofagasta, which is another large multinational mining company based in Chile, it's now consolidated all the Duluth Metals, Franconia mining claims, a project into one. And they're pushing pretty hard, too. That's the next one in line. They're proposing a mine that's 54,000 acres, the largest mine in North America, and that would only be 3 miles from the Boundary Waters Canoe Area.
Really?
Yeah. And so, you know, they obviously see a possibility of a big return on their investment, at least in the short term.
Well, I know that everything I read said that in these particular metals, that the market in the last three years has gone just sky high. I mean, it's really
and you know, let's just be clear though that these metals are not going to stay here. I mean, the metal and the minerals are going to be leaving the United States, probably going to China and India. The profits virtually all are going to be going someplace else. What's going to be left here is the mess. And again, I don't want to be disrespectful to those on the range who need the jobs. I mean, there's some of those communities, their unemployment is 20% or close to it, and you know, that's pretty rough. I don't disagree that that's the reality up there. But on the other hand, there's 30,000 plus or minus jobs here in the Arrowhead, which are dependent upon clean water, natural resources, recreation, and tourism, especially mm-hmm. here along the shore. Now, do we want to have a few hundred jobs for up to 20 years at the expense possibly of all the rest of us whose jobs are dependent upon clean water? I mean, it seems the trade-off is not so great, and the legacy of the mess that's going to be left behind, again, they use the word perpetuity, that's forever, that we'll be dealing with for the rest of our lives and our children's lives.
Where are some of these mines, Frank, that currently are operating, that are polluting, and do you have any idea how, was it the lure of jobs and potential profits?
Yeah, I mean, that's the same story that goes everywhere. You know, these areas generally are not economically very prosperous. There's the Brome mine in South Dakota in the Black Hills that's been closed. You know, it's polluting. It's a Superfund site. Sandusky mine in Montana, it's a Superfund site. Estimate, and they even did financial assurance there. They even bonded for $100 million plus or minus, I can't remember exactly, but they're estimating the cost there is going to be several times that, and so to clean up. And so, you know, they're everywhere that they've done this. They've been New Mexico, Arizona, and the mine over in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, was the impetus for passing the mining law that they have there that we would like to emulate here in Minnesota because of the acid drainage coming from that mine.
Well, now, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency has been around for a long time. Don't these mines have to do EIS, you know, environmental impact statements, and how are they getting the permits to do this?
Well, I think to the EPA's credit, they're looking at these things closer than they probably have in the past. And PolyMet, which again is the first one, we're calling it the bulldozer mine, you know, project. It's their permit has been pushed off again almost another year. I mean, they're looking at 2013 before the earliest they could get approval. I mean, the EPA has said that their proposal is a failure twice. And so they're recooking it, trying to come up with a way to get the EPA to, I mean, I think they might be looking for an election with an EPA director who's more, more supportive of mining than the one they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, right now the EPA is doing its job. It's the Environmental Protection Agency. That's what it's supposed to do.
Right. Now, as far as where they're talking about mining, are they buying up the land? Are they buying up the mineral rights? How are they trying to approach
a combination?
It?
Yeah, they've bought a bunch of land. They've also are buying the mineral rights or leasing the mineral rights from the state of Minnesota. The state of Minnesota owns the mineral rights to the vast majority of private property in the area because of the tax law, the way it was set up in the early 1900s, and those leases are for 50 years. There's another thing that we're working on with this though, and that's to extend the same eminent domain protection to those private property owners that everybody else has. Right now in the state of Minnesota, you can't take property for economic development purposes for a private enterprise. You know, we passed that in the legislature in 2006. And we would like to extend those same rights to private property owners who happen to not own their mineral rights.
Oh, I see.
And and which, in the Isabella area, there's a whole lot of them, and it's around the PolyMet project and other projects. And so the state of Minnesota, or Governor Dayton, put a moratorium on those leases. That moratorium will be up in March, and the executive committee is also going to be meeting, which is the governor, the lieutenant governor, attorney general, all that. Uh-huh. They're going to be meeting on the same day we're rallying in the Capitol to look at this issue.
And I want to remind our listeners again, we're visiting with Frank Moe about Strip and the issue of sulfide mining in northeastern Minnesota. What different organizations are basically involved with this, trying to...
Well, virtually all the environmental groups and conservation groups that are active in Minnesota are in some way involved. The effort that we're working, and this is an effort generated up here in Cook County and Grand Marais. I mean, it's citizens who we talked and we figured, we got to do something about this. So the dog trip to the Capitol and the rallies here in Finland and Ely and Duluth are citizen driven. They're not being coordinated by the established environmental groups. However, the established environmental groups, obviously, and conservation groups are obviously glad that this is going on.
Oh, sure.
And they're giving a lot of PR to it on their websites. But the group that I'm on the board of, Conservation Minnesota, is one of the groups, Friends of the Boundary Waters, Water Legacy, Center for Environmental Advocacy.
And who's organizing the rally at the Capitol?
The rally at the Capitol is being organized by Conservation Minnesota.
Okay. And that I had another question, of course, being my age, it just...
I see that you've done your homework here.
Yes, God. I did a little research, yeah. Oh, first of all, you're taking petitions. If people are interested in this, two questions, really. How can they learn more about the issue itself of sulfide mining? What are a good website to go to? And secondly, how can they get a hold of a petition to sign a petition if they want to do that?
Well, two things. I would encourage anybody who's listening, if they're all available on Thursday, to come out to the rally. We're going to have speakers. We're going to have it's not much of a rally to protest sulfide mining pollution, but more a celebration of northern Minnesota's natural heritage and our effort to protect that. So it'll be 11:30 in Harbor Park.
Okay.
But also we have a website that, again, put up by this group, ad hoc group of people. It's Sled Dogs to St. Paul, St. Paul, just ST, not spelled out, .org. And on that, you'll have the itinerary of the trip to the Capitol. You'll have links to several different petitions. We'll be collecting the petitions from all the respective groups and private citizens, letters and everything. But there's some petition links on there that you can go to and either sign online or print them out and make hard copies, and you can bring those to the rally.
I know part of, or there's been an effort, and I believe Dave and Amy may have been part of that.
Prove it first. Right.
And that's an effort to make the mining companies prove that they will not.
Right. There's a handful of bills that are being introduced in the legislature, and one of them is we've called the Prove It First, and it's essentially the Wisconsin law.
Oh, that you referred to earlier.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what that says is in order for a company to be permitted to do a sulfate mine here in Minnesota, they have to have shown that they can do this for 10 years in some other location without water pollution, and also have closed that mine and show that over time, that over 10 years, that it's not polluting, which ends up being more the issue. You know, they can maintain the settling pools and tailings piles without significant pollution, often, not always, but often, while it's operating. Once they close, and usually what happens is they close because of, you know, pressure, and then they pull the plug and go bankrupt, and then we have to take care of all of it ourselves. So,
sure.
So the Prove It First says you got to operate it and close it each for 10 years before you can be permitted to mine here in Minnesota.
I see.
Yeah.
Once again, we've been visiting with Frank Moe this coming Thursday, 11:30 at Harbor Park Rally, and around 12:30, Frank will be heading on out.
Yeah, we'll hit the trail.
And they're talking good snow, so who knows? Maybe
we're going to go.
Maybe this won't
be
a bad snow mushing year after all.
Right. Maybe we'll be going into April or May. Who knows?
So, by the way, it's going to take about a week, you figure, to get to the Capitol?
Yeah, we'll be leaving here the 1st, and we'll be arriving at the Capitol on the 8th.
And have you arranged for overnight accommodations on the way?
I have a tent and a sleeping bag. And I have a cooker to warm up food for the dogs, so we should be okay.
You should be good to go.
Right.
Frank, thanks so much for taking time to come in tonight.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Buck.
Do you mind one quick thing?
Not at all. I wasn't.
It seems to me that they've been going through the same process in the UP, haven't they? Same issue.
Yeah, they have. In fact, we were just there for a race, and the same controversy is going on in the UP that's going on right here.
Is there any effort to work together on the same issue?
There's not a coordinated effort with us and the group in the UP yet, other than learning from each other and being supportive of what they're doing there. Their issue has their permits aren't as far along in the process as ours are here. They've also got a history of it, and so you know, they're on the Keweenaw Peninsula and further east. There's a history of sulfide mining already. Their economy is worse than ours too, though. So the allure of that money and those jobs is even more appealing there.
Did the previous mining leave Superfund type situations?
Yeah. There's existing pollution coming from mines there, both in the Keweenaw and further east in the UP.
And yet the economic problems would still allow them to do it again? I mean, you'd think that maybe there'd be a learning process there.
These things are always mixed. You know, you have people on either side of the issue.
Sure.
Northern Michigan's tourism economy is strong. It's a little different than ours. You know, they have a lot of downhill skiing, motorized recreation, some fishing, some camping. But here on the North Shore in the Boundary Waters, our economy is really driven by fishing, camping, canoeing, more silent sport recreation. Not that we don't have snowmobiling here. We have great snowmobiling here. But, you know, so we don't have as much of a history of these type of real catastrophic mines as they do.
I was just saying, you know, the feelings are mixed, but a Superfund is not mixed. You know, it's straight pollution.
Yeah, and yeah. The Superfund law got changed back in the early 90s, in that they took the provider tax out of that. So the people who are doing the pollution no longer have to pay into a fund.
I see.
And so the Superfund is a misnomer. There's no money there. And so the federal government, the EPA, has to litigate to try to get the resources to clean up those sites from the companies that made the mess. And oftentimes, if they're bankrupt, then those sites, there's no chance to actually clean them up. There's no money to do it.
Thanks, Frank.
Yeah.
Appreciate you coming
in. Hope to see everybody on Thursday at 11:30 at Harbor Park.